fiscal office represented this morning by Rick Olson and our legislative assistant, Gina Harrington, and this is the General Government Subcommittee, and we have a full complement of Senate and two House members sufficient to go ahead and open the work session this morning on Senate Bill 5543, Secretary of State, Rick Olson, Legislative Fiscal Office. If you would, please, Rick.
Thank you, Chair Butler, members of the subcommittee. This morning we'll be working from three documents, which I've placed at your individual places. The first is the memo dated July 15, 2003. The second is a one-page document that discusses other fund ending balance, a worksheet for you. I apologize for the small type. In an effort to get it on one page, the font size is a little bit small. And then finally, the LFO spreadsheet providing details for the recommendations. We'll start down through the memo. The first item, performance measures. Performance measures were reviewed by the subcommittee during...
Excuse me, Rick. I failed to acknowledge Secretary of State here with us today. Thank you. Honorable Secretary Bill Bradbury, we're pleased to have you here and honored that you'd come. Thank you. And we'll probably have you and Kathleen and other folks, Catherine, probably offer testimony as we go along. So let's go ahead. I beg your pardon, turn it back to Rick. Thank you.
Thank you. First item, the performance measures. The subcommittee did review the performance measures presented by the Secretary of State during the budget hearings. Because they're not under the executive branch, the performance measures were not presented in the same format that you were accustomed to seeing. However, the subcommittee did not have any concerns about the performance measures that were presented. They can be found in the budget binder beginning on page 13. They discuss performance measures related to three Oregon benchmarks. And again, there were no concerns. LFO would recommend that the subcommittee approve the performance measures as submitted by the agency.
Mr. Chair, are you going to look for motions on each one of these items as we move through?
I think that would probably be appropriate. Representative Johnson, relative to performance measures, paragraph A.
I would move that the committee accept the LFO recommendation of approval of the performance measures as submitted by the agency.
Is there any objection? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. Thank you, Representative Johnson. Rick?
Okay, now what we'll do is we'll go down and review adjustments to the governor's balanced budget by division. The first is the executive offices, and you'll be seeing as you go down through this for each division an LFO adjustment package 001 and an LFO adjustment package 002. These are the packages that you've seen in all budgets that have come through the subcommittee. LFO adjustment package 001 relates to the salary freeze. These are the adjustments for the executive office for the salary freeze, a reduction of $5,946, general fund $7,566, other fund. And then the LFO adjustment package 002 is the reduction for the DAS assessment rate reduction, the attorney general rate reduction, which you might recall, again, is being made anywhere that attorney general rate or attorney general line item is included in the budget, and then standard inflation reductions. I have the numbers for each of those there on that memo. If you want additional detail, they would be contained in the spreadsheet that I've distributed to you as well.
Senator Devlin's recognized.
Might I suggest that we, if it would be okay with the chair, that we go through each division and then do the motions after each division?
Yes, yeah. We certainly can do that.
Yeah. Moving on to page two for the executive office. Package 110, Cultural Trust. This package, as contained in the governor's balanced budget, removes general fund from the cultural trust. And in addition to, it shifts the cultural trust from the executive office's of the Secretary of State to a division separate and distinct by itself. We will come back to that later on. That's the last division that's included in the memo here. So at this point in the executive office, no adjustments are being made, and they'll be made when we get to it later on.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for the legislative fiscal staff. When you say it shifts from the Cultural Trust from the Secretary of State's office to a separate division, out of the executive portion of the Secretary of State into a separate division within the Secretary of State.
That's correct.
Okay. I just want to make sure I understood that.
Yes, that is correct.
Paragraph number 9 on page 7 is where that will show back up, Representative Johnson. Thank you.
And then package 112 is a position reclassification. Secretary of State is now proposing that this package be withdrawn, and so LFO is recommending the package not be approved, and you see the necessary adjustments there for that.
You've heard the legislative fiscal recommendations. Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, I would move that the committee support the LFO recommendations with respect to policy option package 001002, 110, the Cultural Trust, package 112, the position reclassification, recommend being withdrawn in the executive offices of the Secretary of State.
You've heard the motion that we accept the legislative fiscal office recommendation relative to the executive office of the Secretary of State. Any objection? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. Archives Division, parcel number 2.
Mr. Chair,
yes,
if you wouldn't mind a step backwards, I just want to make sure that the reclassification of the director position for the Cultural Trust is, that was up and now it's down.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, that...
it removes the reclass.
Back further in the memo, when we get to the Cultural Trust, it does remove the reclass.
Okay, good. Thank you.
So we'll get to that in a little while.
Okay.
Moving on to the Archives Division, again, package 001, adjusts for the salary freeze. It also eliminates two vacant positions as we reviewed vacancies within the agency. You'll see as we go through this memo that there are 5 vacant positions that are eliminated. 2 of those are here in the Archives Division, which total 1.17 FTE. And then package 002, again, is the DAS assessment rate reduction, Attorney General rate reduction, and the standard inflation rate reductions.
Are there any questions relative to the A and B portions of the Archives Division? Let's go ahead with the C&D packages as well, Rick.
Okay, package 121. This is a funding shift for 2 positions. During the 3rd special session, these 2 positions were eliminated in the Archives Division. This package would restore those 2 positions and shifts the funding for those positions from general fund to other fund. And LFO is recommending approval of that package. Those other funds would come from fees for the services provided by the Archives Division.
Is there a separate fee bill somewhere, Rick, or is those fees are already in statute and being collected?
Those fees are existing. My understanding is there's no change to those fees.
Thank you very much. Please proceed.
And then package 004, this relates back to this one-page spreadsheet that you have in your places with regards to the ending balances of the other fund throughout the Secretary of State. This one for the Archives Division is from the Record Center. You'll see that the estimated ending balance for 0305 is $182,000. Package 004 would shift $100,000 of that ending balance to backfill general fund.
That's on this ending balances sheet, which you've handed out separately, and that's on the right-hand side, the last of the dark highlighted areas, which is about the 4th piece up from the bottom.
That's correct. And this would leave an estimated ending balance of $82,000, which is approximately 2.6 months worth of reserve in that account.
Okay. Any questions? Representative Johnson?
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee accept LFO recommendations for the standard adjustments policy, package 001 and 002 of the Archives Division, and that we accept the LFO recommendation on policy packages 121, Archives Funding Shift, and 004, Other Funds Ending Balance Shift, in the other adjustments for the Archives.
You've heard the motion. Are there any objections? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. Moving from the Archives Division to the Audits Division.
Thank
you. Take the Audit Division. Let's move past the Audit Division right now into Business Services Division number 4.
Okay. Mr. Chair, member of the subcommittee, bottom page 3, Business Services Division. Again, LFO adjustment package 001 for salary freeze. And this package also eliminates one other vacant position, as noted there. And in package 002, the DAS assessment, attorney general rate, and standard inflation reductions that are being taken, and those numbers are there. And then C, package 004, this is another other funds ending balance shift. This would take $250,000 of the ending balance and use that to backfill $250,000 general fund, which would leave approximately $170,000 estimated ending balance in the fund for approximately 2 months worth of reserve.
We've got a question relative to the 2 month reserve. You have 4.8 months, $250,000. 2 months would be about $104,000.
Actually, the 4.8 is $422,552.
Oh, I see. I beg your pardon. Okay. I'm sorry.
Is the 4.8 months worth.
Okay. So that's the total. All right. So this, on the ending balance separate sheet, which you've passed out, is the first highlighted item on the right-hand side, which is the second column down of other fund balances.
That's correct.
Thank you. And Rick, 2 months, and in both cases we've tried to maintain 3 months. In our other agencies, is that to tell me what the thinking is by having approximately two months reserve?
Mr. Chair, in consultation with the agency and in the information which they have provided to us in this spreadsheet, you can look up there on the heading column over on the right. It says the agency tries to maintain 2 months reserve in each account.
Okay. All right. So this is consistent. In keeping with that. Any questions relative to the legislative fiscal recommendations for the Business Services Division? Representative Johnson?
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee accept LFO recommendation for the standard adjustments in Adjustment Package 001, Personal Services, LFO Adjustment Package 002, Services and Supplies, and Policy Option Package 004, Other Funds Ending Balance Shift, in the Business Services Division.
You've heard the motion relative to the Business Services Division from the Secretary of State's office. Any objection? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. Corporate Division.
Okay, Mr. Chair, member of the Subcommittee Corporations Division. Again, LFO adjustment package 001 is the salary freeze. This also eliminates two vacant positions, which brings the total up to 5 vacancies that are eliminated. And then package 002 is the adjustments for the DAS rate, Attorney General, and inflation. And you'll see the adjustment there. And then package 151 is a position reclassification. This package would reclassify an Office Specialist 2 position to a Research Analyst 3 position. And again, the Secretary of State is proposing that this package be withdrawn as well. And so LFO is recommending that the package not be withdrawn.
Questions of the Legislative Fiscal Office? Representative Johnson?
Mr. Chair, I move the committee accept LFO recommendations on the standard adjustments for LFO Adjustment Package 001, Personal Services, LFO Adjustment Package 002, Services and Supplies in the Corporation Division, and that the committee accept the LFO recommendation agreeing that the Secretary of State is proposing that Package 151 position reclassification be withdrawn.
You've heard the motion. Are there any objections? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. Relative to the corporate division, moving on to number six, elections division. Rick?
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, package 001, again, is the salary freeze adjustment amount. Package 002 is the DAS assessment rate reduction, attorney general rate reduction, and the inflation reductions. C, package 161. This package would add one investigative position to investigate election fraud in the state of Oregon. This is a general fund position, and due to general fund constraints at this time, LFO is recommending that this package not be approved.
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, would it be possible to hear from the Secretary what effect the failure to fund this position would have on the safe and legal conduct of elections?
You bet. I think we've heard from the Secretary's office before, but Mr. Secretary, enter and sign in, please. Thank you again for coming. We're honored to have you here today, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the subcommittee, Bill Bradbury, Secretary of State. Pleasure to be here. I think the answer is that things would stay the way they are. And there was a lot of concern in the last general election cycle about questions of fraud. There were several cases brought and convictions made about people doing illegal signature gather, doing techniques that were illegal techniques to gather signatures. Our concern was that the elections division, didn't have the staff to do specifically to do investigations in the field, nor did the attorney general they have so many things on their plate that this one did not rise to the level of sending out investigators. So we thought that the integrity of the election process, it was critical to have an investigator on staff. So the result of not funding it, we support the LFO recommendation in this case.
Thank
but
you.
The support of not funding it is, or the result of not funding it is, things stay just the way they are.
Representative Johnson, follow
I'd
up.
Be prepared to offer a motion, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Representative Johnson, motion?
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee accept LFO recommendations in the standard adjustment area LFO adjustment package 001, personal services, LFO adjustment package 002, services and supplies, and the LFO recommendation not to fund policy option package 161, the added investigator position in the elections division.
You heard the motion relative to the elections division. Any objection?
No objections, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, I recognize Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree fully with the motion that Representative Johnson has made, but I just wanted to put on record that there still is a major issue pending in this division in terms of paying for the cost of the voter's pamphlet, and that the bill that will cover the cost of that voter's pamphlet is in Senate rules. And probably before we can take final action on this particular division, we're going to have to know the outcome on that particular bill, because that's a fairly major source of funding for this particular division, and the voter's pamphlet, the future of it is in question without that bill.
That'll be a supplemental budget item at that particular point, and we'll have to consider it separately. And Senator Devlin, being one of the more instrumental folks on that side of the building, maybe you can work and blast that. So we appreciate any of your support, and I'm sure the Secretary of State would as well.
Got a little dynamite?
Yeah. You heard the motion by Representative Johnson relative to the Elections Division. Hearing and seeing no objections, so ordered relative to the Elections Division. Mr. Olson.
Okay, moving on to the Information Systems Division. Package 001 is the adjustments for the salary freeze. Package 002, again, makes the adjustments to services and supplies for the DAS assessment, attorney general rate, and standard inflation reductions. Package 172 is a package regarding IT projects. This package contains funding for several projects, and I won't go through the list of all of them. There are a couple of projects that would be funded from the general fund, for electronic filing of candidate contribution expenditure reports and redesign of a database to prevent court-ordered confidentiality of personal information. There are projects that are funded through other funds. LFO is recommending that the part of the package that is funded with general funds not be approved. So you see a reduction of $450,000 general fund, which is not part of the co-chair's budget. And then LFO would recommend that the remaining portion of the package be approved, less the $1,515 for reduction in attorney general rate.
Are there questions of Legislative Fiscal Office relative to package number C there, the IT portion? Let's continue on with the IT portion in 173 and item D.
Item D, package 173, this is IT maintenance. This is an ongoing package that would continue to be necessary. This package includes software maintenance for 8 major information systems and then several minor systems that they have within their division. Again, this is all other funds and is not general fund, and LFO is recommending approval of that package. Moving on to package or item E, package 171, Information Systems Division Positions. This package would add 3 new positions to the division, 1 developer position to support new development in online and e-commerce applications, 1 security administrator position, and 1 requirements and testing manager position. Again, a portion of these positions would be funded with general fund, and again, due to the situation and the status of the general fund and the general fund constraints, LFO is recommending this package not be approved at this time.
Rick, let me ask this. The 3 positions full-time were, that would be a total of 3 positions, $600,000. That's an average cost of $100,000 per year. Per package was in excess of $100,000 per year. These are all fairly high-level information systems positions.
Mr. Chair, yes, they are fairly high-level. That amount includes not only salary but other payroll expenses such as PERS,
right.
Social Security, those things. Plus, it includes a small portion of S&S related to the new positions. The acquisition of perhaps computers, those kinds of things related to these.
I see. So the S&S is included in this?
That's correct.
Okay, all right.
This is the total amount of the package.
All right. I'm sorry. I was just equating this strictly right. to the personnel portion. I just was anxious to know about that. Package F?
Package 174, IT fund shift. This was to rebalance funding within the division. Again, it increases the general fund. And so, again, due to the general fund constraints, LFO is recommending this package not be approved as well.
Questions? Legislative Fiscal Council, Legislative Fiscal Office regarding the items here and the information system users. Representative Johnson?
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee accept the LFO recommendations for the standard adjustments, LFO Adjustment Package 001, Personal Services, LFO Adjustment Package 002, Services and Supplies for the Information Systems Division. I also move that the committee accept LFO recommendations for the policy option packages 172, the IT projects, package 173, IT maintenance. Follow LFO recommendation to not approve package 171 IS positions and policy option package 174 IT fund shift in the Information Services Division.
You've heard the motion. Are there any objections? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. Moving on then to number 8, Personnel Resources Division.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee. You'll see in package 001, which is the salary freeze, that there is no adjustment there. There are only 3 positions within this division, and there are no savings from the statewide salary freeze at this time. I don't recall, but I assume that all 3 of those positions are at the top step, so there was no step increase included in the budget. Package 002, the services supplies adjustment, again, the DAS assessment rate reduction, the attorney salary reduction, and then the standard inflation reduction. Package 181, this is, again, another position reclassification package. And again, the Secretary of State is now proposing this package be withdrawn, so LFO is recommending not this package not be approved. And then package 004 is the last of the three other funds ending balance shift. This uses $50,000 of other fund ending balance to backfill $50,000 of general fund. The estimated ending balance after this shift would be $172,000. And this is approximately 3 months' worth of reserve.
That's with regard, again, to your ending balances sheet, which has been handed out in the middle of the highlighted items for the $50,000 savings in backfill to general fund. You've heard the recommendations of Legislative Fiscal Office. Are there any, is there a motion? Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, I recommend that the committee accept the LFO recommendations for the standard adjustments in policy package 001-002 and accept the LFO recommendations in policy option package 181-004 in the personal resources division, personnel resources division.
And recognizing that package 181 has been withdrawn.
Right.
With that, you've heard the motion. Are there any objections? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered relative to the personnel resources division. Moving on to cultural trust, item number 9.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee. Again, this is the new division that would be created within the Secretary of State's office, shifting the cultural trust out of the executive division. Package 001 is the salary freeze adjustment. 002 reduces the budget for the DAS assessment rate reduction. Package 110 is the position reclassification that Representative Johnson was mentioning earlier regarding the Cultural Trust Director. This position reclassification portion of this package is now being withdrawn by the Secretary of State, and so LFO is recommending the package not be approved. Package 111 is the package that creates the separate division within the Secretary of State. There's a small adjustment here due to the Attorney General rate reduction. We're recommending approval of that package as modified.
Questions? Representative Johnson.
A question to LFO. Given this shifting of the location of the Cultural Trust out of the executive portion of the Secretary of State's office, were any consideration given to another location for the Cultural Trust, would the actions that we take today with respect to the budget make that prohibitive, or would other options continue to remain for a different positioning of the Cultural Trust should the legislature deem that advisable?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, this action today does not prohibit that from taking place under some other legislative action. And I do know that there is some proposals out there to move the Cultural Trust. If that were to happen in that particular bill, that piece of legislation, there would be some budget adjustments made as well.
Let me ask this, Representative Johnson. Is a portion of your question perhaps that did LFO look at any potential savings if there was a shift away from the present location?
Mr. Chair, in reviewing and analyzing the budget, we did not do that. However, if a separate piece of legislation were to make its way through the system and make its way down to the Legislative Fiscal Office for a fiscal impact statement, that certainly would be a part of the fiscal impact process. So that will be looked at.
President Johnson, was that responsive to your question?
Absolutely.
Okay. Other questions relative to the Cultural Trust? Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee accept LFO recommendations for the standard adjustments in Adjustment Package 001, Personal Services, in Adjustment Package 002, Services and Supplies, Policy Option Package 0110, to withdraw that package, and Package 111, creating a separate division for the Cultural Trust inside the Cultural Trust Unit of the Secretary of State's Office.
You've heard the motion. Are there any objections? Hearing and seeing none, go to the Cultural Trust. We'll go ahead and approve that section. Let's move back now to the auditor, and that's on page 3. And colleagues, let me, as we get ready to go into this, let me say this. I want to be sensitive to the issues that surround all of the ongoing discussions and considerations and problems with our budget issues. Also want to be sensitive to the fact that we're going to have some discussion here as to whether or not this budget bill passes out of this committee today and goes to the full, or whether or not it may have other considerations in other places in the building. We also want to be sensitive to the fact that our legislative fiscal office representative, Rick Olson, goes in for rather serious and significant surgery on Monday. Will be not with us for at least 2 weeks following that surgery. And I want to express appreciation for the good job you've done here, Rick, and also recognize that, you know, when you're out for your surgery, and we wish you Godspeed and the very
Thank
best
you.
Of luck for your health and a successful return to your occupation. But I'm anxious that we get as far as we possibly can in the discussions today to see if we can't move forward with a package that will be acceptable and bypass the, if you will, the circuit breaker process that the House is working on. So, Senator Devlin?
Mr. Chairman, in terms of the recommendation regarding the audits division, I think there is quite a bit of opposition to that recommendation, both within this committee and actually within at least my caucus in the Senate. And so I would believe that a course of action, we can't probably get resolution today, would be to approach the co-chairs about the possibility of looking for other ways to address some of the savings that they want to get in this budget. I think with some of the other savings, I'm not looking at potentially a $3 million general fund saving, something probably somewhat less than that. But I think we need to get resolution to that, and I think that the Secretary of State is prepared to look at other options rather than taking this level of a reduction in the audits division. And I think given our particular time that we're in right now under extreme budget constraints and the realities that we may be under similar constraints in the next biennium, making reductions in the division that's supposed to look for potential savings in state government operations seems to be penny wise and dollar foolish.
And I would respond to that. Thank you very much, Senator, that this is certainly one of the agency's charges to look after the financial affairs of the state. The concern that we have here is that the number and the cost of those discretionary audits is what is at stake in our discussions today. I think what I'd like to do is go ahead and have the legislative fiscal recommendations relative to audits divisions items A, B, and D. And let's see if we've got consensus there, and then we'll move forward with item C. Mr. Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, member of the subcommittee. Package 001, again, is the adjustment for the salary freeze. Package 002 is the adjustments for surface supplies, DAS assessment rate, attorney general rate, and the standard inflation reductions.
Okay, and item number D?
Item D, package 005, is a pharmacy benefit administrator audit. This is an issue that has arisen in the Department of Human Services, and there has been a bill that's passed out of the House Health and Human Services Committee and is currently in Ways and Means that addresses this particular issue. What this does, this is part of the co-chair's budget. would add $50,000 general fund for the audits division to contract out for this particular audit of the pharmacy benefit administrator of the Oregon Health Plan. And they would obviously have some conversations with the Department of Human Services, and there's some concern and some question as to whether or not the current pharmacy benefit administrator is doing an adequate job. And so that's what the funding for that audit would be.
And let me ask this relative to Package D and the use of general funds. The pharmacy benefits administrator under the Oregon Health Plan, that's got to be a fairly substantial amount of federal funds. Why is it that audit would use general funds? Sure, we're required by federal law to give them an audited update. Is this an extraordinary audit?
Mr. Chair, I understand that this is a separate and complete distinct audit from those other requirements that the federal government has.
I see.
And this $50,000 would be the maximum amount of general fund. And as they contract out and perhaps do an RFP for this particular audit, the actual audit costs combined with some federal funds would come in less than what is here.
Excellent. Senator Winters, did you have any comment?
No, just to say that it's the intent is to have some integrity in the auditing process and to assure that we're getting the kinds of information and data that is not somehow tainted.
So to make sure that the audit process of the pharmacy benefit administrators and independent audit as opposed to being conducted from within.
Right.
Excellent.
Clarification that it's an independent audit done by the Secretary of State's office rather than an internal audit done by the Pharmacy Benefit Board.
The
Department of Human Services. Thank you. I just wanted to get that clarification.
So that we do have that independence, which Senator Winter indicates. Provide the greater integrity there, potential integrity. Representative Johnson, relative to packages A, B, and D in the Audits Division.
Mr. Chair, I would be prepared to make those motions, but the Secretary of State appears that he's going to pop if you don't recognize him.
Oh, okay. I have you want me to put my glasses on and see if I can see him?
Mr. Chair, with your permission, I would have Kathy Polino just speak for a moment about
the item number D.
Specifically, the audit you're talking about, the pharmacy
manager.
Okay, Ms. Polino.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. Kathy Polino, director of the Audits Division. This particular audit is one that we've had some discussions with Representative Bates and a number of people on. It's an audit that's been people have been wanting to have done for quite a while. I am not a budget person, so Rick, I'm looking to you for some help on this. I'm not sure how the federal fund match can work with this because we could not, at the Audits Division, get that kind of match happening. And so I know there were some discussions on having the Department of Human Services pay for the audit, and then because it is an audit that they might be able to get some federal fund match for, they would be able to have a $100,000 audit rather than a $50,000 audit using general fund and then a federal fund match. So I'm not sure the mechanism and how this all works. We explained that we would be happy to perform the contract management services for this audit and do some initial scoping using our own staff to help identify what the exact scope of the audit should be. And my understanding is that we were going to be doing some billing to DHS, who would then be paying for the audit. So I'm not sure how the mechanism works, and I think that needs to be worked out.
Rick, can you help us with the mechanics of that?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee. That is an issue that is still on the table, and there's still a lot of unanswered questions regarding that. However, I know that there were some members who were concerned about, again, making it distinct and independent from the Department of Human Services. And so the decision was made, at least for the time being, to put the money here in the Audits Division. And then as we start to go through that process, we can work through those questions. And if there's no way to get the federal funds within the Audits Division, we may have to shift that funding to the Department of Human Services and then have them pay the audits division. But at least for now, the intent is that the co-chairs is to get this $50,000 someplace.
Catch up with you here.
Get this $50,000 someplace in the division, in the audits division for the time being. And then those details will be worked out as an RFP is issued and federal match questions are answered. And
thank you.
The emergency board can deal with that if needed.
Senator Winters, for administrative items relative to the health plan, do we submit bills for work accomplished, or do we submit anticipated invoices for work to be accomplished to the federal government?
We actually submit two after the fact.
After the fact. So it may be that we'll be required to use more general funds up front to meet the obligation and then replenish those general funds by submitting the invoice for the after the fact for an administrative item of this nature. Okay. Thank you very much for that explanation. With that, Representative Johnson, relative items A, B, and D.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we accept the LFO recommendation with respect to Standard Adjustment Package 001, Personal Services, Standard Adjustment Package 002, Services and Supplies, and Policy Option Package 005, Pharmacy Benefit Administrator Audit in the Audits Division.
You've heard the recommendation of the Legislative Fiscal Office and the motion relative to items A, B, and D on the Audits Division. Any objection? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. Relative to Package C, Rick, before we have the Legislative Fiscal's recommendation and any further discussion on that, I'm catching some heat from constituents in this morning's radio broadcast back in the Treasure Valley on the other side of the state. What on earth are you doing with regard to the employment division? I'd like to just have an update, Kathy, from you relative to the audits division and what we discovered actually and what the cost of that audit was to the state.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. We do a number of audits at employment. I assume you're talking about the recent one on and I can't remember the title of the audit, on looking at their unemployment insurance program and how they manage that program. This was, we feel, a real successful audit. We found, I wish I had it with me here today, I could help you out a little bit better. We identified a number of information sources that the employment department wasn't currently using, or and in fact a couple of them that they didn't know existed, that they can actually use to help them identify people that are receiving unemployment that shouldn't be receiving it, and then also employers that should be paying unemployment insurance that were not paying their insurance. And one of the examples was we took the Department of Corrections database and did a match with who was receiving unemployment insurance and found, I can't remember the exact numbers, 30-some inmates that were receiving unemployment checks.
That were then currently receiving regular benefits.
Correct. They received unemployment benefits and cashed the checks. And
so while they were within the system.
Right. So they were not available to work, which is one of the requirements of receiving unemployment. And so that match, and I wish I had the numbers with me, I apologize. I think there was about $30,000 that they're going to be able to go back and recover. Another one of the bigger pieces to this audit that, you know, we couldn't put a dollar amount on what the savings will be, but the IRS has this 1099 information available. And that information can be used, obviously, by the employment department to do a number of these matches. Our office facilitated a meeting with the IRS and the feds, with the State Department of Revenue, and with the employment department, got them together and found that there is a way to do some information sharing with all those groups. And so we are now going through all the hoops that we need to go through to get access to this information. But we've talked to a number of states that already have access to the information, and they have found that they've been able to save, you know, quite a bit of money by obtaining access to that. We don't have an estimate of what that's going to help bring in the future. But that was a big step, and the Employment Department has, you know, they've told us they were really appreciative of us being able to help them get to that point. So,
Kathy, I guess I am very concerned and have expressed my angst that between the Department of Employment and the Department of Revenue, that they share some of their databases with other governmental agencies in the state of Oregon. Clear back in 1999, when I first arrived in this process, that they begin to share those databases relative to the folks that they're paying with other governmental agencies. And so now they are just coming to the conclusion that the Audits Division has given them that maybe they ought to be sharing that database with the Department of Correction, with some of the other departments, where we've got unique identifying numbers that identify these folks, and they have not previously done that. Now, the explanation to me in 1999, and the explanation to me in 01 and in 03 is that we do not have legislation in place, the regulatory process, to allow us to go ahead and audit based upon identifying factors, the identifying numbers, in this case, Social Security number. And you're telling me that the Audits Division comes in and says, well, why don't you use the Social Security number to do a cross-match with the folks that you're paying to see if maybe there's some folks that you shouldn't be paying, and they say, well, this is a great discovery. I'm kind of anxious about how that turns out. Can
sure.
you share that
sure,
with me?
Sure, Mr. Chair, yeah. For a number of years, the federal government didn't allow that kind of information sharing, and it was only until recently when the feds have loosened up the reins.
Did not inform the Employment Division?
That's right. That's my understanding. My understanding.
So you were in possession of that knowledge, but the director of the Employment Division was not in possession of that knowledge.
That's correct.
Okay. I find that somewhat unique in that process. But have you identified, without expending any money on an audit, where we could be using this in other agencies of the state government? And have you shared that then as a memo to all agencies that they ought to be sharing information back and forth using these identifying factors?
Mr. Chair, we have not done that yet. This is one of these things that when we were doing a particular audit at this department, when we did our survey of other states and what's happening out there, we identified this change in the law and that there was some new information available, brought it back, and we looked at what were some of the hurdles that needed to be jumped here in Oregon. And they are starting to go through those hurdles right now. They were unaware, first of all, that the law changed, and then second, they weren't sure if this would provide enough benefit. And so by us going out and doing some research of what other states have been able to do with the information, they've had some success out there. And so we said, you know, we don't know what kind of success you're going to have here in Oregon, but it looks like it's worth it based on what these other states have been able to do.
We do not do the UI budget in this particular, in general government, in this particular sub. But I would say this, I would look very carefully at the director's travel budget and dues budget that presently, because there's got to be at least 49 other unemployment insurance directors statewide or nationwide that should have had access to all of this information much sooner than the Audits Division has to come in and enforce or help with that kind of an enforcement issue. In other words, you know, as a certified public accountant, that we don't promulgate the law. Normally what we do is we just go ahead and adhere to the law and the regulations, restrictions that are provided to us. To have you folks being the driving factor behind the technology for a division in the state of Oregon, I find somewhat disquieting. Representative Johnson's recognized.
That's the bad news. The good news is that through the efforts of the Audit Department, a longstanding problem that you traced back to 1999 now appears to be resolved through the diligence of Ms. Polino and the Audits Division. So I think despite the fact that this may not have gone as expeditiously as you wanted, the outcome is desirable and, in my opinion, makes the case to keep a fully staffed audits unit.
And the question is, I have there is the cost of this audit, of this particular audit.
I sent it to Rick earlier, and I don't have the exact number. It's $57,000.
Rick, can you help us with that?
$57,242.
To save or to identify a savings presently of about $30,000 plus then. Okay.
Mr. Chair, the $30,000 was just the Department of Corrections match. We did four different matches. There was another match looking at day-to-death records, and there weren't as many dead people receiving unemployment insurance, which was nice to know. But we do not know what the value of that 1099 information will be to them, which I'm sure will be of great value once they get it and start using it. Other states have found good value there. So.
Thank you. Other questions of Kathy? Death records, prison records, what were the other two?
I believe one of them had to do with business registration or different kinds of licensing board information that might be available.
Licensing board bill died in the Senate. Thanks to Senator Hannon over there that killed it to try and share the licensing board information. And we were told, at least by legislative counsel, that we needed to have that particular law, and I've confirmed that with Director Harchenko, that we needed to have some connection so that the Department of Revenue could share the database, and I say share the database, at least allow those folks who have licenses that are applied for via Social Security numbers to at least share the fact that they are, in fact, paying their income taxes and that there's not substantial obligations against those folks. Now, again, why it is that we go to the Audits Division to find out what the most current federal law change is, I have a serious question whether or not those audits should be shouldn't be being paid for directly by those divisions. Excuse me, Senator Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, I don't want to really go off on a tangent, but it does seem interesting, Mr. Chairman, that my understanding is that the Department of Justice, maybe not in this state, but I assume in this state because it comes about because of changes in federal law, has the ability to suspend privilege licenses for non-payment of child support. And so they must have access to this information somehow. And so it seems interesting that they have access and you can't get access in this other case. So I can understand legislative counsel. Maybe there is actually a barrier to doing this, but I think this is part of the frustration of this this whole process is that, and, you know, I don't want to really say this exactly. Imagine if we have these problems with the agencies now, imagine if there is no watchdog actually looking over their shoulder in terms of their compliance. I understand your frustration. Agencies should have been doing these things. I don't know when the changes in federal law were, but they should have been doing these.
Do we know when the change in federal law occurred, Kathy?
Mr. Chair, I'm sure my auditors do.
Maybe we should find that out and see how long it's taken them to.
This is a rather grave concern to me because if this information was available to the director of the Department of Revenue and available to the director of the Employment Division of the State of Oregon, and they have continued to stonewall any attempts to go ahead and do a cross-match number. And I told them at the time that they could probably get this done by a high school kid. It'll have to be done after 3:30 when classes are out during the day. But they could probably get that cross-match information done by a high school kid. It is not complex information.
Mr. Chair, one clarification I want to make sure. The Department of Revenue has been getting this information for a number of years. It's not new for the Department of Revenue. The Employment Department wasn't sure what kind of value that they would get for this information and whether jumping through all these hoops would be worth it for what they would be able to do with it. We found that other states have gone through the hoops, got access to the information, and have had some success in this particular program.
And the Employment Division didn't know that.
Mr. Chair, they knew that they didn't know that the other states had success with this information.
But they knew that other states were actually doing a cross match with prison and death records.
No, Mr. We're talking about the IRS 1099 information, not the prison information.
From the Employment Division, though, the Employment Division knew that other states were having the cross match benefits from the from cross matching Social Security or the using Social Security numbers to cross match unemployment records with prison records. They knew that?
No, Mr. Chair.
They did not.
That's one that we did ourselves.
Okay.
What I'm talking about is we went out and found out that because we couldn't test the 1099 data because we don't have access to it, that we haven't gotten it yet, we couldn't tell you what the benefit would be, but we did have access to the corrections data. So we went ahead and took the corrections data, did the match, and found the results.
Okay.
1099 data we didn't have access to, so what we did is we went out and looked to see other states that have already gone through the hoops, gotten access. Have they had some success using it for this program? Yes, they did, and so our recommendation is that our state go through the process to get access to the information so they can start using it for their program.
Thank you very much, Kathy. I'm going to go ahead now and receive the recommendation of legislative fiscal so it's on the record. relative to Audit Division Package 003, Item C.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee. This is the package that would reduce the number of discretionary audits conducted by the Audits Division. You'll see the $3 million other fund reduction there. That the Audits Division has an assessment to all state agencies, and they do some direct billing to other non-state agencies for audit work that is done. The amount of the assessment that is made against other state agencies, as far as general fund and other fund split, comes up somewhat less than 50% general fund. We do not have an exact percentage at this point. That seems to change in some discussions that we had with the agencies a month or so ago. We asked them what their split was. We asked them if more of that split could be of the assessment could be shifted to other funds and resulting in more general fund savings. Again, it came out, we're guessing, somewhere in the neighborhood of 40% general fund, 60% other funds. So when you see a $3 million reduction there in other fund, that would be a $3 million reduction to the assessment to other state agencies, which would recognize somewhat something less than the $1.5 million general fund savings that the co-chairs are looking for. And so to accomplish the $1.5 million in general fund savings, not only would their budget be reduced by $3 million and that $3 million passed on in a reduction to assessment to other state agencies, but there would be $1 million from the other fund's ending balance that is currently in the Audits Division. Again, if you go back to this sheet, you're looking at somewhat over $1 million, $1.1 million other funds ending balance. By combining the $3 million reduction plus use of a portion of that other funds ending balance, that would get to the $1.5 million general fund savings that the co-chairs are looking for. Again, that's not 1.5 specifically from the Secretary of State, but it's 1.5 million general fund savings statewide. And so that's the thought behind this package and the co-chair's attempt to get to that $1.5 million.
Colleagues, we've heard the Legislative Fiscal Office recommendation and the rationale behind this particular savings, and I'm going to express to you that I am anxious as well that and not that we're doing a good job, because I think that we are in fact doing a good job within the Audits Division. It's just that many of the agencies have come to depend upon the Audits Division to help them by auditing them, to show them that they're not using best business practices, when we are paying top dollar to these other agencies to have people who are instructed in this regard and should be encouraged to continue to do that. I further believe that the purpose of a financial audit should be also, and the management letter that comes with a financial audit, should be to tell these folks, wait a minute, you are not using best business practices, and rather than expend another $57,000 to tell you that you're walking past what good business practices should already be garnering for you, that they would have those best business practices implemented within those agencies already. So that's my angst and my concern. I would like to see further that perhaps the Joint Legislative Interim Audit Division would assist in identifying these discretionary audit funds so that they could assist the agency in targeting those areas. Again, if we could have had years ago some, and it's not just this, it's not just the fact that you have to do an audit to come up to find that the UI benefits are not being appropriately allocated and expended. And I realize it makes this is a total of 33 ten-thousandths of the funds that were expended in that particular period of time. It's a very small amount, but it demonstrates a flaw within the system that we've got that we should be cognizant of as we do the financial audits anyway through the audit division, and that the directors should be made aware of early on by their other resources. So that would have been my suggestion with regard to this particular audit issue, as opposed to pulling it out entirely, but moving it over so that there was more discretion within the Joint Legislative Audit Interim Committee. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Respectfully, I see the problem that you have articulated from the flip side of the coin. I think rather than reducing the availability of the Audits Division to perform these audits that result in best business practices, that the burden ought to shift to the managers of, say, employment and revenue to be completely cognizant of the law. I don't see taking money away from the Audits Division as a way to try to enforce best business practices when we have highly paid managers in those other agencies who one would expect to be completely cognizant of all of the tools at their disposal to run their agencies according to best business practices. I see this a problem with the performance measures of the other agencies rather than something punitive to the Audits Division. It seems as though they're being penalized for actually discovering best business practices tools that could help the other agencies.
Well, let's find out to make sure. Rick, does this cut all discretionary audits in the state?
Mr. Chair, we don't believe so.
Okay. No, Representative Johnson, I want that on the record, that this doesn't cut all of the discretionary audits. It again, in my way of thinking, would be to help to redirect those discretionary audits, because the Secretary of State's mission and mandate, constitutional mandate, does not direct in the discretionary audit direction, but does direct in a financial audit direction. And I continue to be concerned with the financial audits. Are the financial audits carrying with them the same amount of weight with regard to the management advisory letters that come with them, and to tell these agencies, wait a minute, you better get your crap together soon with regard to the fact that you are not following best business practices, and publishing that information so that the directors can, for goodness sakes, get their ship in order as quickly as they possibly can, so that we do not lose $30,000 or any other amounts to unemployment benefits that are being paid errantly. So I'm very anxious to the fact that in this process, when we talk about audits, and this isn't just at the state level, but at almost every level, when we talk about audits, we talk about the fact that, yes, we got a clean audit opinion. I'm asking about the management advisory letter that comes with it, that's mandated by your licensure as audits to provide that information. And I'm being told on a fairly regular basis, we don't have a management advisory. We've got the audit. We don't pay any attention to that. We rip that thing off the top, pitch it out, and we just continue on with a clean audit, when in effect we really have some management issues that are not being followed. And I don't know whether whether we need to give additional teeth to the Secretary of State's office to say, wait a minute, we're going to give you a certain amount of time to return and report with regard to the management advisory letter, to tell you that if you don't follow that to the very T, that there are going to be other discrepancies and other problems. I mean, you wouldn't allow a long-term internal control issue, the loss of internal control, to stick around very long if you identified it in a management advisory letter, I assume. However, I'm left to believe that an agency would look at that and say, yes, we have a cash management problem over here in the Community Colleges Division, but we don't give a rip, because we were looking for a job when we found this one, whether that's the director or whether that's the finance person in that particular agency. I guess we'll look for another job when we screw up with this one. And that just isn't acceptable in these times and under the circumstances we find ourselves today. And I'm very anxious about that. So I duly note, Representative Johnson, your concerns. But I'm also concerned that what's happening is that we have agencies that are basically receiving, quote-unquote, a clean audit. That is, there have been no defalcations noted, but also recognizing that sometimes there can be other issues that the auditors note, which the agencies are not taking effective action on. And we're not putting enough teeth in this somewhere in that process. Kathy, do you have any? You're a CPA. You understand. You see that she's probably getting as frustrated as I do.
Mr. Chair, one thing that I'd like to say on that point is when we do our financial audits, we do issue management letters with those. All of those are available on our website. I would, you know, recommend that if you'd like to go peek at those, they're all out there. But they do have some good recommendations with regards to fiscal management and looking at accountability over, you know, if you're looking just at the financial statements and how we record assets, how we handle cash, internal controls, segregation of duties, all those things. Those issues are addressed in those financial audits. But one of the things that isn't addressed is any of the other management issues that you've been talking about today, we would not be looking at when we're looking at a financial audit, because we are focused on the financial statements. Are they fairly represented? Are the accounts handled? We have just begun doing, we're calling them resource management audits, which are taking pieces of those and then going in deeper on those agencies that we don't get to very often. We've got 78 staff for 135 state agencies, with one of those agencies being Department of Human Services, one of those agencies being higher ed. We do not get to a number of agencies every year. We just simply don't. We spend, you know, a lot of time at Department of Human Services because they are so big. But because of that, we can't get to many agencies. And so what we're trying to do in the off-season is get to these agencies, which are large agencies, Department of Agriculture. You know, we usually don't even get over to there. That's a big agency. Forestry. For the first time this year, we got over to forestry because, you know, they've got some significant federal programs right
but,
now.
But you changed the director. Don't you have a change of director audit?
We do have those, yes. Yes. But even in that, you know, you are looking at very small issues when there are some big issues out there that need to be addressed. You know, bringing up forestry. You know, what was one of the big issues last year with that the budget had to deal with was the big forest season, fire season that we had. We're in there right now looking at what can we do right now to reduce costs in forest fighting for this next year. What can we learn from last year's forest fighting season? Those are some things that we wouldn't get to during our financial audit.
Kathy, I'm going to say straight out, I'm amazed that we pay a director as much as we do, and the director isn't stopping to say, what did we learn out of the fighting fires this year that we could be beneficial to the bottom line of fighting fires next year? Why do we have to have the brain power of the CPA Brain Power Trust come forward and say, why don't you stop and sharpen your saw just a little bit, or stop and see that your ladder is placed up against the correct wall before you just keep climbing it again and finding out you're in the wrong place.
And Mr. Chair, I know there's a number of great managers out there, and most of them do that. And again, it's one of those that you get a fresh set of eyes. Sometimes you see things that you don't see when you're in there operating day to day.
Colleagues, I can count and know where my votes are at this particular time. We've passed everything except item number C with regard to the audits division package, and then receiving the recommendation relative to change in the appropriations bill. With that, I'm going to go ahead and let's see. Tomorrow we've got OLCC as well as collections. House Bill 3023 to come back from our Monday meeting, and Senate Bill 826 regarding securities fees. And then on Monday of next week, we've got Telecommunications 2577, public hearing, possible work session. And Rick, would your counsel be for us to take this Senate Bill 5543 over to tomorrow? You see any benefits moving that? This would be the last public hearing day that we have of this week before you go on your medical leave.
Mr. Chair, if it's your desire, you can carry it over, and then we can see tomorrow whether or not.
I really would like to have an opportunity to see if we can get some passage. Senator Devlin?
Mr. Chairman, I have no objection to it being on the agenda tomorrow, but I don't think that there's any possibility that we'll have resolution of these issues by tomorrow morning.
Okay. Senator Winters.
If it doesn't appear that we're going to have any resolution tomorrow of the items, then I question why we want to carry it over.
Well, yeah, and I didn't know whether, with Senator Schrader being back, whether or not we would have that resolution or not.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if you're aware that he was going to be back today. He's not back till tomorrow morning now.
Okay. And that's why I ask, because it's my understanding that perhaps we do, as a result of this particular item being a co-chair's, being part of the co-chair's adjusted plan, whether or not that would have benefited us. Rick?
Mr. Chair, we can post it for Monday. I am here Monday, so
okay.
We can post it for Monday and give us a couple days to see if further resolution can be.
Okay. Let's work towards resolution for Monday before your medical leave begins, Rick. And with that, Ms. Secretary, did you want to enter something else into the record at this particular point while we're still in work session?
Oh, Mr. Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity. I just wanted to express that I've really appreciated working with Rick Olson on this budget. He's worked with my staff in a wonderful way, and I wanted to join with your wishes of wishing him well. I know that this has been a difficult budget in terms of various, I guess you'd call them competing forces. I just want to state very clearly that as much as there are some things in what we just went through that we don't like, we understand that we need to make those reductions, and we support every reduction, every adjustment that has been made so far. What I don't support is a $3 million cut in the audits division. And I think that there are a couple of things that this subcommittee should be aware of in terms of the impacts of that reduction. One of the most significant impacts is that one of the audits that we do is there's two federal audits that we do every year to basically continue to qualify for federal money. And we're talking $6 billion a year. And if we make this level of reduction in the audits division, they will no longer be able to complete these federal audits in a timely fashion. So we will essentially be increasingly late in reporting to the federal government, and we increasingly threaten $6 billion in federal money to this state, getting that money in a timely fashion.
The audit for federal purposes would slow down as a result of the performance audit no longer being
accomplished? No, Mr. Chair, the reality is these two federal audits take a large amount of the staff for a shorter period of time, so that as you make reductions, you reduce the ability of the staff to all focus on the federal audit and get it done in a timely fashion.
I see.
So that threatens the $6 billion that we get every year from the federal government. Now, my view is that if you look at the track record of this audits division, and you look at the fact that in 2001-03 they identified $25 million in potential savings, and you look at the fact that for every dollar that's spent on performance audits, which are what are being called discretionary audits, for every dollar that's spent on performance audits, we identify $8 in potential savings. To me, it makes huge, it's an incredibly sensible investment. So I just, I'd ask all of you to sort of, what do your citizens say? They certainly say to me that they want government to be accountable, they want us to spend our money wisely, and they want us to spend our money effectively. And I would obviously argue that the audits division is a key part of carrying out that mandate. The governor has said we need to increase the accountability of state government, and the audits division plays a key role in doing that. So I would just really, I just want to make a very strong statement that I just really think that in these tough times, it's not time to eliminate the watchdog, and it's not time to make a $3 million cut specifically in one division in my agency. If you want general fund reductions, come to me. I mean, I can't promise you $3 million, but I sure have worked closely with Rick, and my staff has worked closely. We'll work with you, but to me, it's not acceptable to just say you're going to take $3 million from audits.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. We appreciate your comments, and of course, if we'd had this 2 weeks ago, before the employment division came out with, you know, a $57,000 cost and $30,000+ potential saved, that would have been a different time to have it. Unfortunately, that's what my constituents are anxious about right now.
Just to counter that, my constituents, on the other hand, are thrilled that we identified profligate waste at Lottery, that the government acted very quickly to dismiss a manager there who had demonstrated an inability to manage that agency. And folks that I talk to in my public forums thank the Secretary of State's office for an aggressive audit function that is not a bit shy about exposing waste and fraud and abuse within state agencies. So as unhappy as your guys are about the employment, mine are thrilled about a lottery.
Well, and the other side of it is that any time that state employees are flying first class, we need to be very cautious about that. Senator Winters?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Of one piece that I think is critical when we look at what we're doing in state government, and that is to be able to have an independent place to go in to look into agencies to determine if they are really operating in a fiduciary manner, and also if they're not, what are the problems? You know, for me, when I saw the audit that flagged what was going on with Lottery Commission was outstanding. I think some of us as policymakers did not know all this was going on, and that's a way for us to get information. The recent audit that had to do with the Employment Division, even though it was 57, you add all the other components, to be able to stop a practice is just as important. You know, when I saw that you've got incarcerated individuals who are receiving, you know, benefits when they're not entitled to benefits in some of these issues, those are now being flagged to correct something for the future. For my agency that I'm responsible for, Human Services, it is critical. I can't say it is critical that we have the ability to go in to do what is necessary to make certain that we are operating fiduciary. So many federal dollars are at risk when we talk about Human Services. I mean, I'm very mindful. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons that we wanted to do the benefit piece was to take it out of internal activity and put it into external. And so I think we need to be to really think this through and be very thoughtful. We do need to have the watchdogs in government, and I think that it is worthy of the investment. I just would not like to see us to be penny wise and pound foolish, because sometimes they are saving us a lot of money. I've been sitting here thinking of even some things that I want to go talk to them about because I, you know, I'm fully aware of when you're dealing with an agency whose budget is in the billions that there are opportunities for us not to always to be have complete oversight. So I think we need to consider that.
Thank you, Senator, and I hope that in that process what we've done is we've sent a message, a shot across the bow, to all directors of agencies that don't understand that you don't fly first class on state money, that you don't throw money out the window at every opportunity by the handful. Even those agencies that are quasi-government agencies have an obligation to be responsible, particularly when we're dealing with public dollars in one fashion or another. And I'm very concerned about that, because I believe that it's the executive department, starting with the governor himself or herself, that the governor's office ought to have a list of criteria of what these folks should be doing, and a little common sense ought to prevail. And that's what's happened, unfortunately, is very little common sense prevailed. Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to say that, Mr. Chairman, I know that you respect the process of the Joint Ways and Means Committee in this process in terms of trying to determine a solution in this particular case, and I do think that there are solutions available, and I would just hope that we could work with the Secretary of State and with the co-chairs to find a solution in terms of budget savings that we may need in the budget, but without doing further harm to some of the functions that I don't think any of us want to see, less oversight of these agencies at this particular juncture.
Thank you,
sir. In fact, I was thinking, Mr. Chairman, in our discussions, and we'll be bringing that bill back tomorrow, 3023, in our discussions of the accounts receivable activities of various agencies and collection activities, I would kind of like to have an audit in that area in the next couple of years.
Mr. Chair, Senator Devlin, we do have one going.
You have one pending. I know. I would have liked to have the results of that one while we were discussing this bill. But
Mr. Chair, just a comment, because one, you have the system. We have a system set where we have the executive, the legislative, and the Secretary of State. And the Secretary of State is there to help, to conduct the audits and to give that independent oversight of agencies. What I see is where there is problems that, you know, we get the reports, the Secretary of State's office. That does not mean that the agency or actually follow the recommendation of the Secretary of State's office. And that is where I think is a huge problem. And it's one that I would like to see somehow that we can't get that tightened, because we can sit here and sometimes I know in some of the reports, and I suspect you can say that you can validate that you're seeing the same problem when you go back in and do another audit.
Mm-hmm. You know, in
and
that
there
regard,
has to be some remedy to that.
Maybe what should happen, and this perhaps if it could bear fruit, it would be that the management advisory letter would become as important a legal document, which basically could state, you know, relative to management practices and best management practices, some of the angst or concerns that maybe your auditors have. I mean, if I'm out on an audit of an agency and I see the director, and this isn't anecdotal, if I see the director arrive in a limousine in a job that pays less than $50,000 a year, there's a pretty good indication that I've got some problems. And as an auditor, I'm not just there to say, yes, your cash is in balance, and no, it doesn't appear that there's any inappropriate activities here. One of the things I'm going to look at is I'm going to look at their transportation account and find out that what they've got is that they're paying a limousine about $105 an hour to drag the director around on an 8-hour day basis. And that's a pretty good indication that there's some slop going on in the agency. But that's not going to come out in my audit. But it surely would come out, I would hope, in my management advisory letter. And in fact, in the audit involved, did. And there were some changes made. But I see this as an area where, again, unfortunately, many times those management advisory letters are just ripped off the top and say, hey, we've got a clean opinion, and no one is appearing to follow up. And maybe what we need to do is, with regard to the Secretary of State's prime core mission relative to financial audits, which carry that management advisory letter, maybe we ought to go ahead and, in the state of Oregon, elevate to a higher level the actual responsibilities as to what happens with that management advisory letter and call those folks back on the carpet. Now, I know that's supposed to be part of the audit, the Joint Audit Committee's responsibility is what are you doing with regard to those kinds of things, but I don't know that they're asking those questions. I'm not having served on that. I don't know that they are technically answering those questions. So, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd follow you right down the trail that you're identifying, where there are commissions attached with managers who have gotten management advisory letters. The commissions maybe ought to have copies of it, particularly if the manager serves at the pleasure of the commission. I'd like to see the management advisory letters go into the personnel files of the managers. at a time at the federal level where we are paying a lot more attention between corporate officer responsibility and the discharge of fiduciary responsibilities, I could very easily make a case to say that those management advisory letters ought to be part of any ongoing personnel review of senior managers. They ought to go to the governor's office if the manager serves at the pleasure of the governor, and some accountability attached to those management advisory letters so they don't, as the chair has pointed out, simply tear those off and they vaporize. That's the way to check back for best business practices being employed and whether or not a manager is actually managing to the highest standards that our citizens expect them to manage to.
Thank you. With that, Mr. Secretary, Kathy, we're going to go ahead and, as a committee, perhaps repost this for January, or for July, not January, July 21st, and with that, we will close the work session on the Secretary of State House Bill, Senate Bill 5543. Thank you very much.